Yeah, yeah, yeah. Happy fucking happy hour. Look, everybody, it's Greg fucking Travis.
Hey.
You're not drinking, so I'm starting the swearing off early.
Go for it. Go for it.
Another sober comic.
Boring.
What's happening to these happy hours? Greg Travis, thank you so much. I've been a fan of yours forever. You're a beloved Rick Overton.
I am. He slept on my couch when he first came out from New York. Wow. We've known each other forever.
I picture you under a blanket with a flashlight doing funny voices together.
No, we didn't get that close. No? We're both pretty macho. Yeah.
Okay, so because I've loved you forever, and I had to go deep, deep YouTube. Sean, you're like, 7 years old, but okay.
Something like that.
First of all, it was a set at Dangerfield, so Rodney Dangerfield, mm-hmm. no longer with us. Your first impression, Robin Leach, no, is he with us? Maybe not. Anyway, Casey Kasem, no longer.
I know. All of my old impressions are dying off.
Oh, trust me. I made my career on Katharine Hepburn in the traffic copter, and that fucked me forever.
And my big one was I used to do Peter O'Toole, Marlon Brando, and Jack Nicholson having cocktails in Bel Air, And it was like, if God could do the tricks that I could do, he'd be a happy man.
Will you shut up with that crap, Peter? Hey, Marlon,
He's from as old school as I am, Sean, where you went, and I think it would go a little something like this.
And I turn around and adjust my hair like they used to do.
Got to do the Nicholson face.
Yeah.
But I was laughing.
Here's Johnny.
Because seriously, you were just as hilarious then. And I was laughing because I'm going, Rodney brought you up. Mm-hmm. And your first thing out of the box was Robin Leach. And it was so hilarious because it's still hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it wasn't just the impression was dead on. But you were like, that whole fucking show was to make you feel bad about yourself. Right?
I know, and Rodney was a trip. He rushed me. He had one of his guys rush me to his room when I first got to Vegas to do the show. He goes, Rodney wants to see you right away. Okay, so we rush up to his suite. They open the hotel, or there's one of his writer guys sitting in the living room, and then he comes out of the back bedroom buck naked and walks right up to me. Hey, we got to get your introduction. We haven't come up with an introduction for you. And I'm like, oh, God, don't let me look down. I don't want to look down.
It's got to be hard to get out of here.
So embarrassing, yeah.
Not even with steel wool. Can you get that out of here?
So embarrassing, yeah.
Wow.
He was a funny character. He liked his pot.
Did you look down?
He liked his pot, but he also liked little short robes that were too short for his junk. And it was just so weird. It's like, Rodney, get a longer robe. What are you doing?
Was he in the Jerry Lewis category? Was he incredibly well hung?
Yeah.
So you did look down.
I couldn't help, but there was no looking down. It was just,
anywhere in the area?
Hello.
Wow. Okay. Maybe that's why his eyes looked like that. The first time he saw it, he's like, oh!
He was a sweetheart in a lot of ways, but he put on a big tough guy act, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But underneath it all, he was really a sweet guy.
I heard that. I never got to meet him. But I think I did Dangerfields back in mm-hmm. the 80s a couple of times. I wasn't really a stand-up like you. I was a morning radio DJ on Hot 97. So I wasn't really. But anyway, so you come out of the box. You're like, because you were like, here's a house in Bel Air that you'll never own. It was great. Because you're right. The whole premise of that show is, why did people
fucking
watch that?
Showing you things you can't afford.
You can't have this. Look at this. You'll never have this, you loser. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And then I knew Casey and
I met him once,
his
too.
His wife, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
That was
such a weird thing about that whole,
the whole stealing thing.
The casket and...
Oh my God.
Yes,
whole weekend
was that
at Casey's.
All about?
And,
I don't know
Jesus.
All the details, but yeah. I know. Yes. Exactly like the movie.
Yeah. But I got to say, even people that are gone, it's still evergreen, and having his sex with his wife. Just do a little bit for us. When she comes in the door.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's like 1,000 feet tall. Yeah.
Honey, I'm home. So take off your clothes and let's make love. But before we do that.
A story about a dog. Yeah.
I've got a few sexual positions I'd like to try. But before we do that.
You were like, think back to a sexual position we tried from 19.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, you know it better than I do.
I do. I fucking loved it. Oh, my God. No, you just did bizarre shit, too. Like, what was the James Mason as who?
Oh, yeah. Oh, James as a Mason Three Stooges. As Mo.
As
yeah.
A, yes.
Mo of the Three Stooges.
Yes, please.
Larry, Curly, I'm going to have to poke you both in the eyes very hard. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Now, let's scram, fellas. James Mason. I'm looking for a small girl named Lolita.
See what we did back in the day?
Yeah.
Impressionist Sean, we did the whole, this is a wacky premise. James Mason would never be a Three Stooges.
It was kind of weird because I always kind of made fun of Impressionists because they were kind of dorky in a way. Right. They were like magicians, you know?
Right.
And right. I made fun of magicians too because my famous bit was the punk magician, which was, fuck yes. You, it's magic, I'm fooling you and you don't like it. You know? Or I put on the punk wig and the glasses and just assault the audience yes. with all my card tricks and throw shit at them. And, you know, it was kind of like Iggy Pop on acid, you know.
I remember.
It was just insane. And they loved it. I did that bit all yeah. around the world yeah. for yeah. any group of people,
right.
conservative, whatever. I did it for a military brass one time in Hawaii, and
right.
they gave me
and
a
you
standing
got shot.
Ovation.
Oh, really? Oh,
oh
no.
they
oh,
loved
that
it.
Ends
oh, yeah, no, they
then.
Loved
I'm sorry.
It. Yeah. It was just something. It's assaulting.
Threw a card at me? Fuck
yeah.
you.
Yeah. they loved it, you know. I got one of those MMA fighters, like one of the Oyce Gracie guys. I think it was Oyce Gracie.
Right.
And him and his girlfriend were sitting on the front row, and I got him up, and I knew it was him. And so I started, like, you know, picking on him and, you know, doing all sorts of mean things. And
right.
then got his girlfriend up and took her bra off and did a – and she was like, oh, my God, you have no idea who he is, you know. But what's he going to do? He can't
yeah.
do anything, you know. It's all comedy.
Fuck yourself.
It's all a show, you know.
yeah.
That's what
I
was
front,
doing.
You're in the front row.
Doing,
it doesn't matter who
yeah,
you are. You're
yeah,
in the front
I was
row.
Doing
yeah,
all that to
know.
Him, yeah.
so, wow. But I mean, so wait a minute. Let's go back. So you were
yeah.
born in Dallas, Texas.
Yes, ma'am.
To Gerald and Elaine.
Yes.
Wikipedia tells me. What was that like for you? No, what was the...
Yeah, I mean, my parents were in the health food business. They had the health studio business before that. They had the first men's and women's health studio in Dallas on Lover's Lane.
What does that mean, a health
and,
studio?
Well,
especially
it's like
in Dallas.
A workout. It's a workout facility.
Oh,
and
I was
so
going to say, like, slightly
those,
less barbecue sauce.
In the early 60s, there was a women's day where only women would come and work out, and then there was a men's day.
Wow.
And mother would run the women's day and dad would run the men's day. And so it was like back and forth every other day.
So they were like workout fitness folk?
Yeah. Yeah.
And was that like the Great Santini for you? Did they make you get up and
No, the health
run
food,
at
they,
four in
they
the morning?
Got out of that business and they sold that and then they got into the health food business.
Oh.
And then once they got into the health food store business, then yeah, we were my sister and I were the guinea pigs of every
oh.
soybean or
say,
every vitamin,
some...
every. You know, here
he's a
try
vegetarian.
This.
He's irritating.
Yeah, I'm a vegetarian now too.
Are you really?
Yeah. yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say that's we're stealing someone else's routine about how everyone looks half dead in the health food store.
Oh yeah.
A little gray.
Well,
little...
back in those days, they we did have a lot of hippies that came in and they would buy like tea to cut their pot with. You know, a certain kind of you know green tea that looked
right.
like marijuana. And,
right.
And but we had all kinds of you know. Spectrum of
so,
clientele.
Wait, so
yeah.
were they politically hippies as well, or what? That seems
you know,
a weird
they were kinda
disconnect
weird.
In Dallas.
Yeah, they were
right.
kind of weird. They were a little more conservative. You know, they were hip in a lot of ways,
wow.
But they were also a little bit conservative, too. You know, so.
Conservative health food store owners in
I
Dallas.
Know. Yeah, yeah.
No wonder you're so weird. In a good way.
And,
yes,
I,
and you had a sister.
I had to play with myself, so I was always in an
Excuse
imaginary
me?
World. Yeah, you know, exactly.
Ah.
But, you know, because I was the older child, and I was always brought to the health food store to hang out
right.
when I was little, so I would, like, make
right.
up little games all around the mall.
Right, and how do you entertain people that are buying spirulina?
Yeah,
Not,
yeah.
It's tough, really. Mungo
yeah.
beans. Okay.
Yeah.
What's
Go clean
funny?
The bathroom, Greg. Go to the back. Go to the back, you know.
So you had a younger sister actress?
Yes.
Stacey?
Stacey Travis, yes.
Okay.
She's a very well-known actress in
oh.
Hollywood.
Oh,
yeah.
I wouldn't know. I always say if Rachel Maddow didn't say it, I didn't
you
hear
saw,
it.
If
I'm
you
a political
saw,
nerd. Yeah, I'm sure
her.
I would.
Yeah.
I don't do anything. I don't leave my house. I watch political cable news. That's fantastic. Okay, so wait. You began at the Improv and the Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm.
You appeared on America's Search for Tomorrow Stars. You went to Bud, which I did the early evening at the Improvs with Bud.
Right, right.
So we come from all the same
yeah,
comedy
I did the,
breeding ground.
I did the evening at the Improv about 15 or 20 times, you know.
Wow.
And,
Bud
was
two.
Like my surrogate father. When I was out here, I was 19. The drinking age was 21. So I worked at the Improv for 2 years.
Right.
before they even knew how old I was. And then I celebrated my 21st birthday, and Bud walked in. I go, hey, I'm finally 21, Bud. And he goes, oh, yeah.
Oh, you lie.
Oh, yeah, yada, yeah.
But, yeah, so I came out here to go to film school. And while I was going to film school, Sherwood Oaks Experimental College. Okay. It was on Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay.
And I was living on Franklin and Gower at the time. And so I just was going to film school and trying to be a filmmaker. And I started doing stand-up, and then one thing led to another, and got a few little breaks on TV shows, and that kind of launched my stand-up career.
Right. I remember my favorite night at the Improv ever. I did Evening at the Improv a couple times, and did L.A. Improv a little bit, but I wasn't, like I say, a real comic like you, but he saw me at Chicago Improv when they opened that. That's how I met him, whatever. But I'll never forget there was one night Jerry Seinfeld went on stage in L.A., and the lights went off. And he's like, just like a Jew not to pay the light bill. And of course, Bud Friedman opened for him and brought him on. He goes, I always think it's a good idea when the owner tries to do comedy.
Yeah, he wanted to be a comedian so bad, bless his heart. Yeah, Bud was really a frustrated comic, you know, and everybody would just go.
But I loved him. I loved him. I loved him.
Yeah.
So, wait, okay. I got to say my favorite. Because you've done so many things I love. Okay, you were in Showgirls. Because this is fucking fantastic. Okay, I don't even remember, but I just, how can you not love that film?
It's a pretty amazing movie. Yeah.
Okay, what did you play? What was it like?
I did not know what he was going to do with the script when I first read it. I thought for sure that they would rewrite it or, you know, punch it up a little bit.
Right.
He shot it verbatim.
Right.
I mean, I wrote I slightly changed a few of my lines, but basically he wanted to make sure that he shot the script the way it was written. In case it didn't work, he could blame the writer, I think, is what was going on there, you know. But it works on so many different levels.
I only remember the girls. I don't remember what you did in that, but tell me what you did.
Yeah, I was the entertainment director's right-hand man. And so I was kind of like his go-to guy that did a lot of dirty work.
Now, did you know this was going to be a train wreck while you were filming it?
I kind of thought it was a little weird.
Yeah.
I did notice that some of the lines were like,
I'm a dancer, damn it.
I think they took it a little too seriously for what the subject matter was.
What was her name? Nomi Malone?
Yeah, Nomi Malone. I'm not a whore. I'm a dancer.
I'm a dancer, damn it.
I'm a dancer. And at the end, she is a whore.
She's a whore.
She turns out to be a whore. Oh, all
that
time.
But Gina Gershon's hot.
Who would have thunk it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it was fun making it. I mean, we hung out in Vegas and did a lot of, a lot of hanging out. Oh, you know where we shot most of it? It was in Tahoe.
Okay.
In the middle of winter.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Tahoe.
Nice.
That big theater.
Well, they didn't,
there.
The girls' high beams went on automatically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Party hats were always out. No kind of fluffer needed. Right.
I guess if you got to be in a bad movie, that's not a bad one to be
in.
No,
it's
the residuals
it's the
are
best
amazing.
Best bad movie
because,
ever. Really?
Yeah, it really is.
What do those look like?
Because the Showgirls show the movie on TV all the time.
Because
and they even
like,
have a TV safe version where they blacked out the breasts.
Buzzkill.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Or they bra. They put like a digital bra over the breast.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
boring.
Really weird. Yeah.
Somebody's job.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You also did short films for SNL. You've done everything, Greg.
Well, like I say, I kind of got sidetracked because I came out here to be a filmmaker, and I started making movies back in Dallas when I was in high school. And I made a feature film my senior year in high school. So
did you intend to be a comic or how?
Not
did that...
really. Okay. I was a magician when I was in high school. I did magic shows for birthday parties, and so I kind of.
So that's where the punk magician.
Yeah, that's exactly. I would do all these kind of parodies of magicians, you know, like Harry Blackstone Jr. and remember Doug Henning, the guy with the long hair and the mustache. I did a parody of him.
Yeah.
And he had a Broadway show. Yeah, he was always, one of those hippie.
Henning.
Yeah, he was the hippie kind of magician, yeah. The new age, yeah. Okay.
What got you into magic? How does that happen when you're a kid?
I don't know. I had a big Houdini fetish.
Oh.
And I used to tie myself up and try to escape.
I don't think that's about magic. Greg, I don't know what that's about.
I don't know what it's about.
I will tie you up at the after party if you really like. Because it's time someone's dream came true around here.
But anyway, that sort of led me to performing was the magic.
Right.
And so I was curious because I was a big fan of comedians.
Right.
If I could do it.
You got your first laugh.
When I got out here, the first night I went on audition night, it actually worked, and I got some pretty good laughs with my little Jimmy Carter impression. And
could you do some of that for us now?
Oh gosh, I don't. Oh, I used to do a character called Doghead Williams. I'm Doghead Williams, you know, just a good old country boy. A lot of people ask me, why do they call you Doghead, Doghead? I said, well, you know, I don't know, you know, just something to do. That was his catchphrase, something to do.
Yeah. Something to do. Ain't nothing to do in the South.
Yeah. Just something to do. I don't remember all the
and
bits.
And furthermore, I'll tell you what. We think that many people in that part of the country start sentences with "I tell you what."
They do,
and then nothing ever good comes after
that. And
they
end it with
except some racist bullshit.
And they end it with "By God." I tell you what, by God.
I tell you what, by God. Here's what.
No, I'm gonna tell you what, by God.
I'm gonna tell you what.
Definitely, I'll tell you
what, by God. That president is from Kenya, by God.
That's right, by God. Prove it. Prove it.
Prove it. Prove he ain't. Prove he ain't.
Black Obama.
What, are you political at all or no?
I like Jill Stein and the Green
Party. Oh, well, all right. I think you're going to hell in a handbasket. That's what I think about you,
but
sir.
I think
you need to get on board.
I worry about the planet, Stephanie. I worry about the planet.
Well, that's fucking bullshit, Greg. You need to get on board or we're going to have an orange overlord. We're going to have an orange Cheeto-dicked overlord. Get with the fucking program, Greg Travis.
Jill Stein, Stephanie!
Oh, Jesus, you fucking asshole. Now I hate you. No, I think that's fantastic. Oh, so you are like your hippie food store owning parents.
I am.
Okay.
I'm very green.
Okay.
Yeah.
No offense to Dr. Stein.
Don't kill a cow.
Yeah. So are you not terrified by this Donald Trump thing? I mean,
it is a little strange.
I mean,
yeah,
come on.
It is a little strange.
Right. Well, tiny bit Hillary.
But as a comedian, I kind of get a sense that he's being funny and being taken seriously on a lot of that stuff.
That was funny for a
second. Yeah. I mean, you know, but you know what I mean? I don't take him as seriously as I think a lot of people do. I think he's joking around on a lot of his stuff.
Really?
I do. Mm-hmm. You know?
Okay. That's what they said about Hitler.
Well,
but look at that ridiculous mustache. He's not serious.
He's like Chaplin. He's like Chaplin.
Look at him. Funny little walk. Come on. Oh, his own salute. Ah, that's hilarious.
That is funny. Yeah.
But, but don't you think that's what a lot of my comedian friends have said? Like, this was funny until it stopped being funny. And then you're like, oh, holy fucking shit.
He's
the nominee, and he's ginning up all this
hatred.
That is amazing
that he was able to beat out everybody in the Republican Party, not even being a real Republican
And
himself,
we were saying, and now he's just, instead of moving forward, he's just sort of reliving it like a high school jock. He's like, little Marco, remember that one?
Yeah.
Remember low energy Jebby? That was great. Remember me?
But that, I mean, what was so amazing is that none of them had comebacks, you know?
I know.
I mean, when they were during
poor
the debate.
Jeb. He just walked into the propeller every time. He's like,
exactly. Just like, Donald. I'm going to cry now.
I'm going to. You. Yeah. Like, Jeb had a new strategy, and he just, every time, he just, like, walked right into the propeller.
Donald Trump, you're the loser.
You know.
I've got to write some Trump jokes. I don't have any.
I expected Jeb to do that thing from Karate Kid, just this. Like,
yeah,
the crane.
Wax on, wax off.
Okay.
But we thought
except he loses at
we
the
thought
end.
George W. was a little slow, but Jeb is like really slow.
Jesus, please clap. You know, it's like, have you ever, as a comedian, had to say,
please clap.
Please clap. Yeah. Please. Please, oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's like Phil Henry. I love my boys. You know that dad that he does? Yes. My boys are in danger. I love my boys. If anything happened to my boys, I don't know what I'd do. I love my boys.
Wait, who's that?
Phil Henry does his character.
Oh,
that's like
because
he's like a dad that loves his boys. It's just so weird, you know? I love my boys. If anything happened to my boys.
We have to applaud you because Phil Henry got sick at the last minute and you step into the fray and we were trying to book you coming up. So
good.
This is, it's all good.
It
we're all so excited.
Out. It all worked out.
Yeah, it all worked out. I mean, so you are one of those people like Rick Overton, you do every voice ever. So you, but the thing is, like, even when those people, like, don't become relevant, you know.
Yeah.
You just move on.
Yeah, you move on. Like, we used to do dueling Sean Connerys.
Yes.
Because he does a Sean Connery.
Yes.
And I do a Sean Connery. When you're James Bond, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Because you're James Bond. So.
So.
Pussy. Come here.
Wow. If you only knew how many times I've said that, but that's in a totally different context. Had so much octopus. Anyway, Greg, my point is...
Yes. What is your point, Stephanie? Yes, of course.
So wait a minute. Your parents were conservative, even though they were hippie health store owners.
They weren't like
But now you're a Jill Stein voter?
Well, they weren't like super. I mean, I didn't go by my...
They must want to cunt punch you into the
Democrat.
Next...
I'm a registered Democrat. I did vote for Bernie in the primary, but... you know, I don't
stem cells around here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like either one, and if that's the choice I'm going to have, I'm going to go ahead and vote for Jill. Why not? What the hell? You know.
So Bernie's not liberal enough for you? Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying Hillary or Trump.
You know,
out of those two, I'm going to vote for Jill if that's the deal.
All right, I'm going to cunt punch you later.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll wrestle you.
Mm-hmm.
I like strong women.
Have you ever?
Greg, have you ever been
married? What's your deal? What's happening tonight? I'm single, too.
I got close a couple of times.
Not really?
But no banana.
Really? What's that about, do you think? Let's delve.
You know, being on the road for so long, you know, it's like out of sight, out of mind. And that was hard to keep a relationship the 20 years that I did stand-up. But then I did acting. I shifted to an acting career for about 15, 20 years. And that's when I got really close. But
you're like, honey, I'd like to marry you, but I'm in Showgirls and I can't.
I don't know if I can handle the kid thing, you know?
Yeah, you don't ever want kids.
I love kids. I don't know that I would be able to. It's a big responsibility.
Well, I love my comedian friends more than anything in the world, Greg, and none of them should ever procreate, ever. I think it's a really good choice. Yeah. Most of us have not.
And you know what's scary is all of my friends who got married and had a kid, then got divorced, and they shuffled the kid back and forth, and that scares me because I feel bad for the kid, you know?
Yeah.
It just, I don't know.
Tell me the drinking thing. How long did you, was it a thing, a problem, and then how long you drank, and then you quit, and how long ago?
I wasn't that big a drinker. I just had a lot of party favors, and it became sort of a...
What does that mean?
Well, during the 80s and 90s, I partook in a lot of various...
Other things.
Yeah, other things.
Other things. So drinking leads
to... And so there was still a little bit of residual leftover every once in a while partying going on.
Yeah.
And one night, I went on a date to this art gallery with this girl whose work was being presented. And I did just about everything under the sun that you could do. I mixed beer with wine, with malt liquor, with hard liquor, with pot, with Coke, with Viagra. I did it all.
Yikes.
And I got so sick the next week. I said, you know what? I'm done.
Done with everything.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long did that erection last? It had to be more than 4 hours. Like four years.
Just long enough to get it going.
Your doctor's like, ugh, great. Yeah. I don't know.
This erection lasts more than 4 years.
You should find some girls, because don't waste this, because this is going to last for like another couple of years.
Yeah, that was a hell of a night. But that was my big lesson. I finally, you know, got to the point where I said, I don't need this anymore.
You're done with all that. Yeah. Well, good for you.
The problem is, if you do a little bit, and I'm not... I got into AA to quit everything. I'm not like a hardcore AA person, but I did help me, you know, give it all up. And so it's just, you know, one thing leads to another. Like if I start drinking wine, then I want a little pot of hit a pot.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it escalates that way.
I think everybody's different. I hate like judgment because I've never done any drug. I've never smoked pot. I don't drink hard liquor. I like wine.
Okay.
And I drink wine.
I've got a briefcase in the trunk of my car.
All right,
I could
let's
really
go.
Change your life.
I drink wine pretty much every night, but I try to stick to a couple glasses. But I think you're right. Like everybody has their stuff you got to look at and go, is this a problem and why is it a problem?
Yeah.
And, you know.
And I also thought when I was getting into my late 40s that like that was enough. I had partied enough.
Right.
I had done...
No, I still at happy I, hours I, like, or at parties. All, sometimes I have too much, and I'm like, oh, you know.
Yeah,
like,
and all of the years that I was on the road, you know. I mean, life was a party. It was just you know.
It's a traveling party.
It was a traveling party. So
it's a disco.
I felt
it's
like I'd had my party.
It ain't no fooling around.
My party favors were done. Yeah, I just... I'd had enough.
But see, I never had that gateway thing. I never went like, ooh, this is a really nice buttery Chardonnay. I need to get some heroin. Like, I didn't, like, there wasn't a gateway. I'm like, where's the blow? Like, I just.
Yeah.
So, no, but.
Well, I mean, when you get bored with Coke and with meth, then, you know, the heroin is the next step.
When you get bored with your meth lab,
yeah.
It's time to, yeah.
Yeah. Talk to Iggy Pop. He'll tell you all about it.
Look what's happened to you, young man.
Yes,
look
ma'am.
At you.
I know.
Look at these two films. So your dream has come true. Midlife and Dark Seduction. What are these? What are these about?
These are my movies. These are my movies.
Look, I'm doing it into the camera.
I did Midlife in 2013.
Yes.
And we got that out on VOD and Indie Rain and iTunes and a couple other VOD channels.
And what is it?
And it's about
compelling and unpredictable,
it
Sean.
Is.
So I've heard.
That's
I play a salesman who's having a midlife crisis, and he's got two ex-wives, a daughter, and he's about to lose his job, and he's trying to hang on to everything.
Right.
And he's just trying to figure it all out of what he wants to do with the rest of his life. And he's an alcoholic.
Okay.
And so... Yeah, so it's got Deborah Wilson, whom you know.
Oh, my
it's
God.
It's got Amanda
Wait,
Servino.
Wait, the African-American actress?
Yes, she plays my boss.
She was my BFF. We were in an improv comedy group together 1,000 years ago here in L.A.
She's
I
hilarious.
Love her
She's
so
talented.
Much. She's so talented.
Yeah,
Oh, my
she's
God.
Wonderful.
Tell her I said hi.
Yeah,
we were in a – and then she went on to what TV show? The
Mad
sketch?
TV.
Yes, Deborah Wilson. She's my – okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
All right.
And Amanda Servino and Leilani Sorrell and Billy Worth and, you know, a lot of really, really talented actors are in that.
And so this is your passion.
Yeah, eventually I've been doing short films.
So is that more your passion than stand-up?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I did stand-up and I loved it, but I kind of like did everything that I wanted to do with it.
Right,
you know,
right.
And
right.
I didn't want to end up in Vegas when I'm, you know, 50 years old playing for a bunch of, you know, gray-haired people, and they're like,
right.
"Oh, do the rich guy again."
Yeah, the
you
thing know. With yeah. We loved Robin Leach. Do that.
Yeah,
they loved
the Robin Leach again. Exactly.
Why? Yeah. I played Vegas once. I opened for Three Dog Night, and I got fired immediately.
Oh no!
For being
really?
Too dirty. Yeah, I didn't know you were supposed to be dirty in Vegas. Who the fuck knew? Fuck you, people. Anyway.
But I'll tell you my opening for Cher story,
oh,
if
please.
You want to hear it.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, I did a
yes,
tour
please.
With Cher, and we did Atlantic City, and that was good because that was kind of a controlled audience, and
right.
they were there to have fun. Then we started doing amphitheaters, and the set took so long to erect at this one venue that we were like an hour late, and so they threw me out there without an introduction.
Right.
And they hated me because they wanted to see Cher. We want Cher!
Boo,
Cher!
Cher.
So I started doing the punk magician because I didn't know what else to do.
Right.
And they really hated me now because all they're seeing is a little guy with a green wig going, fuck you, you know. And so finally they were booing so much. I was like, I'm not leaving until everybody boos. And so I had all the 20,000 people booing me off. And that night, CNN was there,
and
they did a story about it, you know. So the next show that we did, I said, I'm not going to let that happen again. So I pulled out my David Bowie impression with the blonde wig and the whole David Bowie outfit. And I had this little parody song that called Space Monkey that I did. It was like a David Bowie parody. So I introduced myself as David Bowie and came out as David Bowie, started singing this song, and they are buying it. They think I'm Dave. The whole audience stood on their feet. They think David Bowie's opening for Cher, right? And
this is fantastic.
I
didn't pay for this.
I stump my toe on a speaker and hop off the stage with one foot. Say, David Bowie will no longer be able to continue due to technical difficulty, you know. And so then I come back on, I reintroduce myself, I come back on as myself, and it worked great,
that's
you know?
Great.
Then they accepted me.
Oh, my
but
God.
But that was my, like,
wow.
You know, one moment of rock star status, of rock star, you know, life is, like,
oh my
coming
God.
Out as David Bowie and the
hilarious.
Whole audience just like, oh, ah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
David Bowie!
Oh my God. Yeah, I know. I had never, because I said, like, I was just a little fucking radio geek. I don't know. Like, I'd never really done, I did some stand up, blah, blah, blah. But yeah.
But
you've somehow,
got a show.
I somehow
you've
got hired.
A show that you go
yes,
out and do.
Yes, now I have the number one comedy
show.
Tour in the country. Kathleen
yeah.
Madigan's always like, you fucking asshole. You don't even do this. You got to fucking by accident, the fucking number one comedy tour. Yes. Because it's, you know, it's election year. And
yeah.
It's actually a liberal comedy tour. And yeah, we've sold out.
Chicago theater and all over the country.
Yeah, I saw a whole thing on it online. It's great.
No, we have a great time. But it's not just stand-up. It's me and John Fugelsang and Frangela, and it is some stand-up. But it's also Q&A.
It already happened at the Saban Theater?
No, it's happening November 5th.
Okay, because I saw that.
Thank you
for that. I saw that listed over there.
That's going to be the big one.
Okay, good.
You'll be there.
I'll try to come see you. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I was laughing because it's the only time I ever was, my agent called at the time. I don't even have an agent anymore. Fuck them. But he was like, do you want to go open for Three Dog Night? I was like, sure. So I literally had to call the next morning.
Was that a pretty big venue?
I have a bad news. You're fired.
Oh, no. Was it a big venue?
But I got to say, at least two of the three dogs loved me.
Oh, okay.
They loved me. But I was too dirty for the audience. The guy was like, yeah, no. I was like, well, you didn't tell me. I was supposed to work clean? What the fuck? What the fuck, you asshole?
I know. I opened for James Brown one time. It was an all-black audience in like a Huntington Beach rock and roll club. And they came up to me and said, James is in his religious period right now.
Oh.
And so if you say any curse words at all, he won't come out and they'll blame you. And that's what they told me before I go
on. That's fucking bullshit, man.
I know. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I go up and, just clean it up real quick and did the best I could. And they actually got into it after a while. And then I sit back in the back of the room and watch James Brown work. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's
amazing. Oh. I've had him on the show. I loved him. I mean, I do love him.
He was amazing. Yeah.
Well, okay. But so you can do that? I'm trying to do that. So you can just clean up really fast, like just on a moment's notice. You can go, oh, okay.
Yeah, I just, I just cut out all the curse words and basically, did the same bits without them, That's kind of I did cruise ships for a while, and that was the hard part I really had because the jokes don't work as well without the words,
Right.
It's like sometimes the words.
Oh,
like,
they tell you cruise ship speak?
Oh, yeah, you can't. It's got to be like. It's like a combination between
because when
Disney.
You're getting raped in a stateroom and getting thrown off a boat, you need some clean shit.
It's a little tricky. It's like a Disney for adults, And then one time I did a midnight show, and I had like six people show up because it was a ship full of old people. It was like old people and their parents with, I swear, walkers and those little bags of oxygen and like some kind of IV thing. Everybody had a roller stand.
They're rolling around.
And I go, why would you do a midnight show when people go to bed at 8 o'clock at night? What the hell were they thinking, It was so stupid.
So wait, do you stand up anymore?
Every once in a while. Yeah. When I get a gig that I like and they pay me enough, I'll go out and.
Because, I never really liked stand-up. I know a lot of people really like stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really like it.
You know, there's some guys that, like, they're just, it's like a drug to them. There's some comedians that'll, like, drive for an hour to go up and get 20
and
minutes
sets of whatever.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not like that either. It's like, I could take it or leave it. If I never get up again, I'm done. It's like I have no problem.
I tried in New York, and they were like, and I was about to go up there, like, oh, you're going to, Chris Rock is here. You got to sit down.
Right.
And then he'll do 2 hours. And then I'm like, would you go on now? I'm like, well, I don't really feel like that's going to go really well.
Follow,
but okay.
Yeah, following.
Yes, I will follow Chris Rock at the fucking stand-up New York.
Well, and Robin used to come in and do 2 hours of improv before everybody. And then following that, there's just no way. You couldn't follow Robin Williams after 2 hours of improv. But he used to go, he would go around to every club every night in the city when he was like first, first hitting town and just slay the audience.
Yeah.
He was absolutely the funniest guy. He was funnier than Pryor, funnier than Steve Martin.
Yeah.
He was absolutely the funniest guy going.
Were you shocked or did you? I mean, because Rick was very close to him. Rick Overton.
Yeah, I was shocked. I had no idea that would. I mean, the last time I saw him was up at that Throckmorton. Did a show up there a couple of years before that. And he was always hanging out there. And I've known him forever, and so he seemed fine. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean Rick Overton, who is our mutual friend, but it actually broke my heart the way he described it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, he said he said the last few times he saw me, he said I saw the dimming of the light in his eyes.
Oh,
he
really?
Said I saw the dimming of the light, like it just
wow.
I think it was a bunch of things. It was the failure of that sitcom, which you think like isn't that weird that Robin Williams would think that would be some weird, like, mark on his career.
Yeah.
This sitcom where you go, like, who even cares? You have this amazing career. Like, who cares that last sitcom didn't work, whatever, Crazy Ones or whatever it was. But, you know, he just said it was after that. And then he, you know, and also I'm sure all the stuff he was dealing with physically, emotionally, whatever. But, you know, it's amazing, like, people's perception.
Mm-hmm.
Where you go, any of us would die to be Robin Williams. But his perception
was
that he was...
I think he had always been sort of self-medicated and always dealt with depression. Because I remember he was a very quiet, introverted guy in a lot of ways. I remember having dinner with him sometimes. He wouldn't say a word. You know, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know, but then he'd open up and we would have parties for Rick, birthday parties for Rick. And he would come and be a part of the surprise party and be sitting there with everybody else just like a normal Joe. You know, it was really cool that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, then he would be open and, you know, it's just, but I think he was probably on antidepressants.
Yeah.
And I think those can be really dangerous sometimes.
No, I heard you on Rick Overton's podcast, my friend.
Oh, okay.
And, but, you know, I remember another one of them. He's sitting at Greenblatt's outside the Laugh Factory. He's like, oh, I'm talking about a bother eating. and then he's like, oh, you know, somebody else is here. Oh, it's Robin. I'm like, Robin would just come in and sit down. Just like, blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Like, just would show up like a normal guy. Didn't really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. It's sort of. But it's so tragic. People's, like, sort of self-perception, right? That you go, like, somehow he felt like, oh, God, this physical disability and this sitcom not working is people aren't going to. And you think, Jesus Christ, you're Robin Williams. You're going to be beloved forever no matter what you do.
And I'm sure you've gone through that where you blow something out of proportion, where you have a bad event happen.
What are you talking about? No, I haven't, Greg.
And, you know, that can happen to anybody. You just have to kind of step back and get some time and space.
Yeah.
And,
you know, that's what they always say. Suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Right, right.
And that's what's sad. Because, you know, what human being hasn't thought about it? Hasn't been at a sad point or thought, like, ugh. And you know, but anyway. Who else? What other comedians? Because you've known everybody. Like,
yeah.
Who are your closest friends in the comedy community?
Well, Rick is one of them. And I used to just be friends with everybody. I don't really hang out in that, you know, comedy clubs anymore because I spent so much time at the Improv and some of the others that I'm doing other things. I'm really busy with my production company and doing things now.
Right.
So I don't spend as much time. But, I've got a lot of comedian friends. Bob Perkel down in Huntington Beach is one of my good buddies. And I knew Charlie Flesher really well.
I did an internet show with him for a while. Love
and him. I discovered Michael Richards. I'm the one that got him on at the Improv originally.
Wow.
And, we were good buddies back in the day. And, just a lot of them.
Yeah.
Steve Martin was my idol,
yeah,
and also Richard Pryor, and I got to meet both of those guys when I was first starting out, so that was really cool.
And what were they like?
They were Steve Martin was pretty cool. He was pretty open and really a nice guy. Pryor was a little more closed off and kind of weird, you know, because of his psyche and drug thing, and you know, he used to do his coke in the morning, and so he would come down all day long. And then he would perform on the come down.
Oh.
And that was Pryor's technique. And he thought he was funnier on the come down.
Oh.
And so that's what he used to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird thing. But, I'm giving you a little inside comedian scoop.
I mean, but it's not. Like, you feel like, are there any major comedians we know that weren't influenced by drugs or alcohol?
Well, I mean, it used to be pot. Like, if you go back to Lord Buckley...
You know,
he was kind of a major alcoholic drug head, and he actually did acid way back in the day too, you know, but mainly it was with the jazz musicians, pot was the big thing that kind of changed the scene, you know, when that came in.
Yeah.
A lot of comics did pot. And I think Rodney Dangerfield told me a story about who's the San Francisco? I left my heart in San Francisco. Who's
Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett.
Yeah.
He told me a story about opening for Tony Bennett, and he shared a little pot with him. And so then he didn't hire Rodney again because Rodney didn't like his pot.
It was like a big thing, you know.
So Rodney liked the pot.
He didn't like my pot.
Rodney liked the pot quite a bit, as you said. Yeah.
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 Well, I mean, some people do feel like it makes them more creative or more something, right?
Yeah, I had a bad experience on stage. I got really paranoid one time when I was took a like a hit of something.
I feel like it does make you paranoid. Does it, Sean?
I forgot my act, and I was like,
are you asking me something?
Jump in there, Sean.
Sean? Sean, does it make you paranoid?
Maybe.
All right, go ahead.
And so that kind of cured me. I forgot my act when I was like, you know, on it one time. So that cured me of ever smoking before I went on stage. Some guys can do that. Yeah. Some comedians can smoke and go up and be funny, but it kind of it warps your timing and your perception a little bit. Yeah, you want to have that crack timing. You want to be able to really think when you're up there because you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
You never know what you're going to deal with. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Aaron.
He's waking up.
Right. Yeah. Let's hope we've been on camera this whole time. Yeah. Just saying. I don't know. But so what? No, wait. So are you? Do you have any interest in getting married in whatever?
Just you, Stephanie. Oh. Just you, baby.
Oh, why, Greg? This is so sudden, and yet so perfect. What?
It's been a long time.
But so you're my age-ish. And you didn't want to have kids. I didn't either. But so, and you've been close to getting married. Are you dating now? What's your deal?
No, I'm not right now. I mean, I'm dating every once
in a while.
Did
you hear that, ladies?
But
Greg Travis.
Nothing serious right now. Just I've been concentrating.
Do you want to get married? No. Are you at this point like, fuck it?
I don't know. Maybe. If she's got a lot of money, I might consider
That's really romantic. Yeah. That's fantastically romantic.
But you never know. You never know. I'm not totally against it.
Yeah. You did. You were the typical road comic man whore.
Kind of.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I came out clean. I'm still clean.
Okay.
Just
Fantastic.
Got a blood test and I'm all good.
Ladies, did you hear that? He's all clean, smart, funny. He's sober now. Come on.
I wear aftershave.
He wears high karate.
Yeah.
Ladies, let's get this going on.
Really?
Let's get this going.
I'm working out again.
He's a filmmaker. Look at this
director.
Shit, ladies. Look at a director. Right. Look at it. Look at it. Midlife, dark seduction. We'll put. You've been a delight, sir. Let's go after party. You wanna?
Absolutely. But I do want to tell you about Dark Seduction.
Oh, please.
Quick.
Yes, please.
This
please.
Is my new film that took me 30 years to finish. We shot it back in 1984, black and white, 16mm detective vampire movie, and it got lost for a long time. It got bogged down for years and years. I never was able to finish it, but finally we finished it about 6 months ago, and I had a premiere at the New Art Theater April 1st.
Oh my God!
And it was a great turnout.
The New Art's fantastic.
Yeah, and so we did a midnight showing of it, and they loved it, and got a great response.
Oh my God! It
and
looks
so
fantastic.
It is. It's a lot of fun, and it's got a lot of very funny comedians. Tyler Horn is the star of it.
I see that.
Robert Schimmel. Remember Julie Brown?
Yes.
Yeah, she's in
Julie
it.
Brown is my good friend.
Yeah.
She
was one of my girlfriends back in the day.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more
we
about
had a
that.
Thing for a couple
she's
of years.
A little minx, isn't she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's a firecracker.
Yeah, she is a little firecracker, a little red hair motherfucker. Oh, I didn't even see that. Yes, my friend Julie Brown. Wow. Mm-hmm. She is fantastic. How does that make you, what does that give you a little boner when it says a Greg Travis film right
there?
It
does. It does.
That gives you a little boner.
It's
I mean,
a little extra.
And when I don't mean little, I mean like it's huge.
It's sporting wood.
But what I'm saying is, does it give you an erection?
It's, a lot of hard work and a lot of time consuming, setting in little offices, staring at screens, preparing a film because you got to do the editing, the sound, all of this stuff, the music.
Right.
And by the time it's all done, you never want to see the movie again as long as you live.
Wow.
But it does give you a little wood. It does give you a.
Julie Brown has nice tits, don't you think? Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen them naked. You have, but.
Oh, yeah.
My point.
She does, yeah. I don't know what they're like now, but...
Well, they're fantastic.
Back
I've,
in the day.
I've seen them. I've seen them recently, and they're fantastic. As are you. Thank you so much for doing this. I've been a fan for fucking ever.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. I'm going to go cook for you now like a good little woman.
Okay.
I think this might work out between us.
That's great.
I actually really do. All right. Happy fucking happy hour. Greg Travis, go get his films.
Yeah!